to 4 p.m. here on 90.1 KPFT.
Pacifica owned and listener supported for over 50 years. This is 90.1 KPFT and FM HD1 Houston.
Today on the People's News. Before the United States patriarchy, we were a matriarchy. The U.S. Supreme Court ends the immigration Trump policy to make immigrants stay in Mexico. Lone Star Legal Aid talks about crime survival. We've all seen it, able-bodied people parking in handicapped parking. It's illegal, but we have a way we can deal with it. EPA enforcement is just too much, says the U.S. Supreme Court. All that and more on the People's News. We continue to feature music from A Tribe Called Red out of Ottawa, Canada. I'm Steve Gallington. This is the People's News, and the People's News starts now. KPFT is having a town hall meeting tomorrow, Saturday, July 9th, from noon until 3 p.m. It's at the McGowan Stella Link Library, which is on 7405 Stella Link. And I'm asking you, kind of begging you really, if you're a fan of the People's News, local news programming, and all of the news that we show on KPFT, it's crucial that you show up tomorrow afternoon and express your opinion about that. So what's happening with the station? Well, we've had a general manager who just recently left, and we have an interim general manager who also is a host of one of the shows on KPFT featuring music from the Grateful Dead. He has expressed an interest in moving KPFT 90.1 FM from the place where it is now, where we've worked over 75 years to move it to a music-only station. The thing that makes me concerned about that is that's the way that a lot of radio stations went across the country over the last 10, 20 years, where stations were consolidated, then eventually put onto a satellite platform, and then now, finally, Pandora. If you really want to listen to the Grateful Dead, all you have to do is you download a free app, put in Grateful Dead Radio on Pandora, and you can listen to that all day long with a minimal amount of commercials. You really don't need to have a terrestrial radio station for that. What you need a terrestrial radio station for is to hear the things you can't hear on globalized, nationalized broadcast on streaming channels. And those are local news, the weather, national news, headlines, and discussion that you can't hear anywhere else. That's really the niche that KPFT and the People's News has carved out over the last 5 years. So please come out tomorrow and express your opinion and help us keep local news and local information on the air, the stuff that you need to know. Once again, KPFT's town hall meeting will be tomorrow, Saturday, July 9th, from noon until 3 in the afternoon, and it will be at the McGowan Stella Link Library on 7405 Stella Link. Please be there. I will be glad to greet you, to shake your hand, and thank you for all your support of the People's News over the last 5 years and what we've done. We really do appreciate that. So, once again, KPFT is having a town hall meeting tomorrow, Saturday, July 9th, from noon till 3 in the afternoon, and it is at the McGowan Stella Link Library, 7405 Stella Link, and I hope to see you there. You're listening to the People's News on Community Radio KPFT, Houston. The U.S. Supreme Court ended the Trump administration policy of remain in Mexico. President Joe Biden had been trying to end the policy since he took office, and this is a clear victory for him and for immigrants. We talked to immigration lawyer Renetta Castro on what is next and how broken our immigration policy remains.
It's very important we discuss the background behind this law. United States asylum laws require individuals who are seeking asylum protection to present themselves at a port of entry, in this case, a border. And during the Trump administration, the MPP, the Migrant Protocol, was implemented, which kept migrants in a third country, in Mexico, as their U.S. asylum claims were processed. This is considered a violation of current standing immigration law because whenever an individual settles in a third country that is not their country of origin or the United States, it defeats their asylum claim because it says that they can be safe somewhere else. So the Biden administration victory in the Supreme Court is more than a victory for immigrants. It is a victory for the sovereignty of U.S. laws and for the separation of the legislative and judiciary branches of the United States. So as of now, the president, and immigration is an area of federal jurisdiction, therefore the federal government has exclusive jurisdiction on immigration matters. The government has the ability to process asylum claims as the law requires. So individuals who come to the border and say, I'm at risk because I am being persecuted in my home country as a result of my race, religion, national origin, political opinion, or because I belong to a particular social group, these individuals will go through a credible fear interview, and then their claims will either be heard in the United States because they have a bona fide, a real fear, or they will be removed or deported back to their home country or to their country of origin without having their due process violated because they were being kept in Mexico, as was being done by the previous administration.
That what I thought was that migrants that come to this country are allowed to, once they're here, they're allowed to stay here until their immigration case is heard.
That is, in the case of individuals who are coming through the border, if they do the right thing and they go through the what's called an admission, or in this case, my apologies, if they're inspected, meaning they go to a port of entry where there are immigration agents or government officials, and they say, I am here because I fear for my life, I'm being persecuted at my country of origin, and I am here to claim asylum. They get to stay in the United States while their claims are heard if and only if they have a credible fear, and that is established at the credible fear interview. So it's not, well, I'm here, I want to claim asylum, and I get to stay in the United States for an indefinite amount of time while my asylum claim is heard. There is a process, and there is an order in which things have to happen, and migrants must show that they have a credible fear to stay or to leave their country and seek protection in the United States.
Here in Texas, and I don't know about Florida, but here in Texas, Republicans especially are stating that it's an invasion. They're calling this an invasion, and they're calling out the Supreme Court decision as a mark for more invasion into this country.
Listen, I think that in recent years, immigration has become the issue du jour for candidates who are running on a certain platform. It has become the norm to blame everything on migrants, when we have to understand that the United States has codified immigration laws and they must be followed. Texas and Arizona and California have a particular issue because of their geographic placement, at the same rate that different states have different issues. No one talks about the fact that individuals cross the United States-Canada border without inspection as well. It's just a different demographic. However, Texas has benefited greatly economically from the movement of individuals into the state who work and create jobs. Does Texas have a peculiar situation? Without question. But until we address the inadequacy of U.S. asylum laws, we will continue to have these problems. This is far from an invasion, quite to the contrary. We are seeing labor shortages that were accentuated by the COVID pandemic, and most of these positions, particularly in service industries, being filled by migrants. We need to stop as a country. We need to stop pretending that we don't rely on the labor, the much needed labor of migrants. We need to implement a process that is more humane and that accounts for people, but that also punishes U.S. employers, including those in Texas, who hire undocumented aliens without any kind of punishment. So the conversation is a lot broader than there is a an invasion at the border. I don't believe that to be true. As someone who is at the front lines of working with migrants day in, day out.
Except
listen, Trump made his fortune in the real estate and the hotel business. As an immigration attorney, I can tell you, I doubt that there is any hotel, construction, restaurant operator in the United States, a poultry, agriculture operator that does not have an undocumented alien on their books because they are struggling to find workers. We see this day in and day out. So if we really want to be fair, we need to cut the feeding line that brings individuals to the United States. If they can't work, they won't stay here. So let's start by punishing the employers so that they stop hiring undocumented people. But when we have a real food and service shortage in the United States because we won't have those arms to work, then maybe finally the Congress and Senate will take some action. The conversation needs to stop to depart from being polarizing to being effective and to educating the American people as to why we need effective immigration reform, not amnesty. Effective immigration reform so that America can go back to being a country that not only makes sense, but that also we give people the opportunity to thrive, not because we are a socialist country, that'll never happen in the United States, but because we know that this country was built on hard work and tenacity, and that's what migrants from since the inception of this country have brought to the United States.
I have to have two more questions. One, your thoughts on the smuggling case here, where we have migrants being again trapped in a tractor trailer and killed for the most part. Your thoughts on that, and also DACA.
That's a lot of very important issues, and I really appreciate you having me, you know, giving me the opportunity to educate your audience on this information. So let's talk about this tragedy that happened, and with so many migrants dying, it's not the first time. It won't be the last time until we have comprehensive immigration reform. Individuals are trafficked into the United States, and they're at the mercy of coyotes who have no regard for human life because they're desperate, they're misinformed, and quite honestly, because American, and when I say American, are individuals in the United States, employers are luring individuals to work in the country. And you know what? If you have to feed your family, you end up doing what you have to do. I think that a lot of us can relate to that. And they are uninformed, and they risk their lives. The tales that we immigration attorneys hear from people who are raped, killed, beaten, kidnapped on the border are horrifying. We were saddened by the news, but we were not surprised. It's a time that we don't wait for the next tragedy in order to take action. Those 51 or 53 deaths could have been avoided had we had comprehensive immigration reform. Now, when it comes to DACA, the DACA kids who are now adults have really been weaponized and are being pushed back and forth when it comes to the discussion of whether or not immigration reform for DACA holders should be passed. That's a no-brainer. These kids who are now adults were brought here against their will because they were minors. When you're 12 or 5 years old, you don't get to say where you're going. You go where your parents take you. They should have been granted the opportunity to have a green card. And if we really want to make this fair, give them a green card and just don't allow their parents who brought them here to gain status. That's what would be, in my opinion, the United States should reap the benefits of having educated these kids who are acclimated, who speak English, who at large don't have a criminal record. They are just as American as those who have been born in this country. They just lack the proper documentation. So why not take advantage of the willing workforce? In addition, if we want to have a discussion over fairness, the Mavni program, which allows certain individuals from serving in the U.S. Armed Forces in exchange for becoming, you know, green card holders, why not bring back Mavni for DACA holders and say, you know what, you want to be a green card holder or a U.S. citizen, serve this country. And I am sure that the overwhelming majority would be willing to do that because they love and they serve the United States. And quite frankly, it's a country that will not protect them if needed be. But I believe, as an attorney, that Congress and Senate members know that it is not good re-election business to pass comprehensive immigration reform. And what results is that in the end, we see people, humans, whose lives are placed on hold because of political strategy as opposed to public service.
That was immigration lawyer Renetta Castro. You're listening to The People's News on Community Radio KPFT, Houston. Digital media specialist Ashley Robinson from Lone Star Legal Aid interviewed communications assistant Natalie Cochran and staff attorney Sharonda Robertson to discuss crime survivor projects and resources available within the Justice for Crime Survivors Project and the Crime Victim Unit at Lone Star Legal Aid.
Lone Star Legal Aid's mission is to protect and advance the civil legal rights of low-income Texans and to make legal information accessible for all. Our Crime Victim Unit assists survivors of crime with civil legal issues they are facing because of the crime committed against them. Our Justice for Crime Survivors Project provides services and assistance directly to victims of crime to speed their recovery and aid them through the criminal justice process. I'm Ashley Robinson, Lone Star Legal Aid's digital media specialist, and today I'm joined by staff attorney Sharonda Robertson of the JCS Project and communications assistant Natalie Cochran with the Crime Victim Unit to share key information about our client community, the application process, available resources, and more. Natalie and Sharonda, please introduce yourselves.
My name is Natalie Cochran, and I'm the communications assistant for Lone Star Legal Aid, and I work under the Connecting Texas Kids to Coverage Unit and the Crime Victim Unit. I'm responsible for the production of internal and external communications that promotes free advocacy, legal representation, and community education that ensures equal access to justice for the millions of Texans living in poverty.
And I'm Sharonda Robertson, a staff attorney in the Richmond office. I work under the Justice for Crime Survivors Project, JCS for short. We represent victims of various types of crime in their legal matters.
Sharonda, can you describe the Justice for Crime Survivors Project for our listeners? Who does JCS help and what issues do you help with?
Absolutely. The JCS Project helps survivors of crime with all sorts of different legal matters that they're facing. This includes, but is not limited to, crimes like human trafficking, domestic violence, homicide, emotional abuse, physical abuse, robbery, assault, identity theft, neglect, elder abuse, kidnapping, stalking, bullying, arson, sexual abuse, burglary, fraud, theft, cyber crimes, and vandalism. The main types of cases that we see with regards to those are divorce and custody, because domestic violence is such a prevalent issue in our society. But there are a lot of other things we can do to help, such as name changes, foreclosures, helping with debt issues and evictions, and all kinds of other things.
Natalie, can you tell our listeners how you reach the community on projects and updates within CVU?
Yeah, so I reach the community by strengthening public awareness of victim issues, by writing educational blogs on legislation and projects within Lone Star Legal Aid, news releases and stories of justice on survivors of crime, which help other survivors learn about our services and seek legal aid. I provide support for all substantial law types and special projects and inform the community on these projects by assisting in the production of social media content that reaches our community, our client community, and community partners. I raise awareness by hosting virtual outreach events, by bringing CVU attorneys and partner organizations together to discuss victim rights. Another way is by educating our KPFT listeners.
Sharanda, I know you touched on this earlier, but what types of cases do you see most often?
I'd say that most often we see family law types of cases, like the divorce and custody cases, as well as protective orders. And again, that's just because domestic violence and sexual assault is such a crisis in our society, and it's just so prevalent. And so I think statistics show that 1 in 4 women and 1 in 10 men are going to experience domestic violence at some point in their life. And so the natural first step in someone leaving a violent situation is to apply for divorce and custody so that they can get into a safer situation for themselves and their children.
What would you say to someone who is considering seeking help, but safety is a concern?
Yeah, safety is always a big concern when it comes to domestic violence and sexual abuse. We believe that safety planning is paramount. And so having a really solid safety plan is going to be the most important thing. And the first thing I would talk with someone about who's considering seeking help. And that's normally going to start with a counselor who specializes in helping survivors of domestic violence. And they are able to create a safety plan that's personalized for an individual in whatever situation that they're facing. And statistics show us that when a survivor is leaving an abuser, that's actually the most dangerous time for that person, for the survivor, is when they leave. And so having that plan in place before taking the steps to leave is going to be extremely important and beneficial to their safety. So again, I would talk with a counselor who could personalize that to your situation, because it is going to be very individualized. And I would also say that if someone has not been physically violent, if you've been going through emotional abuse or verbal abuse, if it hasn't already turned violent, it could become violent once they find out that you're leaving. So again, that's important to have that safety plan in place. There are 3 tools that I really recommend. One is called the Power and Control Wheel. This really helps open people's eyes to if they might be in an abusive situation. And that, along with the Domestic Violence Danger Assessment Tool and the Cycle of Abuse Tool, that you can find all 3 of those online, tend to really open people's eyes to understand that the situation they're in is indeed an abusive one and a violent one, if they fit within those criteria. And that can also be a good first step in seeking help, is realizing that what you're experiencing may not be normal.
Lone Star Legal Aid's website has a safety exit feature. Natalie, can you tell us about this?
Sure. So in the upper right-hand corner of our website, we have a safety exit button. So if a survivor is seeking help on our website, they can click this button to safely close the website, and it will automatically remove it from your search history. And as of today, if you click the escape button on your keyboard, assuming you're using a computer, it will also automatically take you to Google.
If anyone listening lives outside of Lone Star Legal Aid service area, who would you recommend crime victims contact for help with legal and non-legal services?
I recommend the Texas Crime Victim Legal Assistance Network.
Can you tell us the purpose of the victim network?
Yes. So the Texas Crime Victim Legal Assistance Network creates a directory of victim service providers working collaboratively to help ensure survivors of crime access the free civil legal help they need to recover from victimization. Today, the victim network has expanded to include partners all over Texas and continues to grow with partners representing legal aid, nonprofit victim services, and other legal statewide collaboratives.
LSLA shares information and resources about civil legal issues on a daily basis. Natalie, how can our listeners find LSLA on social media?
We have a Facebook page at facebook.com/LoneStarLegalAid. You can also find us on Instagram at Lone Star Legal Aid and on Twitter at LStar Legal. We also have a YouTube channel, which serves as a database for information on a variety of civil legal topics. You can subscribe at youtube.com/LStarLegal.
And lastly, Sharanda, how can our listeners apply for legal aid?
If you or someone you know is needing legal assistance, please contact us online anytime at www.lonestarlegal.org or by calling our 1-800 number, and that's 1-800-733-8394.
You can get in touch with Lone Star Legal Aid by going to their website, lonestarlegal.org. You can also get in touch with them at 1-800-733-8394. You're listening to The People's News on Community Radio KPFT, Houston. How many times have you seen an able-bodied person take a disabled space and shake your head thinking, that person should get a ticket? Well, the City of Houston has a program that trains volunteers to enforce disability parking, and it's one of the largest in the country. With a new online training, volunteering is easy. John Mueller reports.
If you polled people with disabilities on what superpower they'd choose, the power to enforce disability parking would be near the top of the list. Disability parking abuse is consistently a top accessibility obstacle, not only for people with disabilities, but also with employers. The City of Houston happens to have a program that does just that, empowering people with disabilities, seniors, veterans, family members, anybody, to protect the right of access. Maria Arshad, Assistant Director of Park Houston, which manages street parking, says it's important work they do in our community.
The city, via Houston Police Department and Park Houston, we both do enforce ADA parking. But here is the thing. ADA parking is literally in every strip shopping center, in every mall that you go to, in every building, every parking garage that you park in. There are ADA spaces. And we have, of course, limited resources. We can't be everywhere all the time. And so the volunteers really help with enforcing, like, you know, when they go on their weekly grocery trip, they can check out the surface lot for any ADA violations there. When they're out and about just doing their own, you know, taking care of their own business, they can be, you know, kind of eyes and boots on the ground to assist in enforcing these, because literally there are hundreds of thousands of ADA parking spaces. And of course, police, they do enforce, but HPD, I think you and I both agree, have other priorities that they need to be, you know, focused on. So the volunteers help to, address that issue and help to ensure that those spaces remain open for folks who truly need it. A lot of times people just think, oh, I just need to run into the grocery store, grab some milk, I can park here real fast, and then it'll be 2 minutes. Folks generally tend to think it's not, you know, such a bad thing, or it's not a crime. My 2 minutes, what I think is just 2 minutes, and it's not hurting anyone, is really making it impossible for them to get into the store.
Several cities have volunteer enforcement programs. Houston's, established in 1995, is one of the nation's largest.
We have trained more than 400, you know, throughout the years. We have typically about 120 active volunteers. It is a diverse group of people. We have, you know, folks who have disabilities themselves, so they have, you know, a hugely personal stake in ensuring these spaces are open. We have volunteers who have a loved one who has some kind of disability, and they have a huge personal stake in it. And then we just have volunteers who, you know, this is how they give back to the community. They, you know, they have a problem with people parking in spaces without the appropriate credentials.
Now, training is even easier. In May, Park Houston announced a new online training course. It has 24-hour access, so volunteers can complete the 4-hour training and certification at their convenience. Last year, Park Houston digitally trained over 100 new volunteers, and volunteers issued 4 out of every 5 disability parking citations. All right, can you explain their basic duties?
So we provide 4 hours of training to our volunteers, and we basically, you know, give them the ins and outs of what to look for if they're, you know, out one day at the grocery store and they see a vehicle that doesn't have a placard, or the placard might be expired. We teach them how to, you know, read the expired tags, and we, you know, we explain to them how to write the parking citation, how to take pictures. You know, we we talk to them about, you know, what to do if someone's sitting in the car. Always ask the person to move their vehicle. That's like the best way to start off. We don't want to just go and straight issue a citation. Give the person the opportunity to fix what's wrong. We talk a lot about safety with our volunteers and really urge them to, you know, walk away from a confrontational situation and, you know, think of themselves first. Don't worry about the ticket.
In 2019, volunteers issued 9,800 citations. In 2020, they issued 8,400. That averages 8,000 to 9,000 a year at $500 each. With so many interactions, there have been rare confrontations. In 2019, two volunteers sustained minor injuries in separate incidents. In one, an 18-year-old Richmond woman was charged with assault for allegedly slapping a volunteer. It wasn't enough to discourage the dedicated volunteer. He continued on in the program. That sense of mission was reflected by another volunteer I talked to, who herself uses a wheelchair. "I think that the work is needed," she said, and her voice set with determination. "I think that it's important because it's not a victimless crime. For me, it's necessary. It has to be done." Volunteers must be 18, have a valid Texas ID, and pass a criminal background check. For more info or to sign up, visit houstontx.gov/parking/volunteer.html. That's houstontx.gov/parking/volunteer.html. People on the street can also report ADA parking violations or any parking problem by dialing 311. For the People's News, this is John Moeller reporting.
You're listening to the People's News on Community Radio KPFT, Houston. Maternal deaths would skyrocket with a nationwide abortion ban. We hear more from Roz Brown with the Texas News Service.
Texas is home to 1 in 10 Americans of reproductive age, and mandated births due to the state's abortion ban will increase the number of maternal deaths, according to new research from the University of Colorado. Currently, 26 Republican-led states plan to outlaw abortion, but there's a growing movement by conservatives to make it illegal nationwide. Should that happen, sociology professor and the study's lead author, Amanda Stevenson, says maternal deaths would jump 13% in the first year and increase to 24% in subsequent years.
In the United States, the rate of maternal deaths in 2020 was 23 deaths per 100,000 births. In rich countries that have good access to health care, the rate of maternal deaths is well below 10.
Texas has the 8th highest maternal mortality rate in the nation, with just over 34 deaths due to complications of pregnancy or childbirth for every 100,000 births. Stevenson says just how society will facilitate access to abortion for those living in states where it's illegal, or how criminalizing it will impact health care, were not factored in. Overall, the United States has the highest maternal death rate of any developed country, which Stevenson says climbs still higher for rural residents and even higher for Black Americans.
Staying pregnant is more deadly than having an abortion. Abortion is very safe. Staying pregnant is relatively deadly in the United States, and so more people will die.
Stevenson recommends investments in maternal health care in states where abortion is illegal, especially to address racial inequality. Neighboring New Mexico, where abortion remains legal, is now a destination state for many Texans seeking the procedure. For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the People's News on Community Radio KPFT, Houston. The Supreme Court ruled that the Environmental Protection Agency has overreached their authority when regulating climate-changing greenhouse gas emissions for existing power plants. In its 6-3 ruling, the court said that only Congress, not the EPA, has the power to create a broad system of cap-and-trade regulations to limit emissions from existing power plants in a bid to transition away from coal to renewable energy sources. This decision is what Governor Greg Abbott and power plants in Texas were hoping for. Luke Metzger with Environment Texas has a different take on the decision that affects all Texans. We talked to him about the ruling and other concerns of the environment, like methane gas leaks.
Talked to Luke Metzger with Environment Texas, talking about methane release of gas in the air. Can you talk? You kind of press me talking about that. How much is that a danger to the citizens of Texas, namely in the Houston area?
Yeah, so what we did was look at federal data for pipeline, methane gas pipeline leaks and explosions that were reported to the federal government. And we found that nationally, a gas pipeline leaks every 40 hours in the United States, and no more than in Texas. Texas had the most leaks and explosions of any state. And so that, you know, that's a really serious problem. You know, especially, you know, we, I think, hear all the time about house explosions and, you know, and other things. You know, in Texas, we had 287 incidents between 2010 and 2021. 68 resulted in fires, 33 in an explosion, and those killed 14 people and injured 58 people, and cost, you know, more than $116 million. These leaks also resulted in 4.4 billion cubic feet of gas, you know, which of course is a significant global warming contributor being released to the atmosphere. So, you know, it's a huge problem, and you know, this data only refers to incidents that were serious enough to report to the federal government, and so the actual problem is far greater than the numbers that we were reporting. And it's just a reminder that methane gas is dangerous, and we need to get away from it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, well, now, as far as enforcement, how is that going? Because, you know it's lax enforcement in Texas in anything environment related.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's why, you know, it's really critical that we have the federal government act, as well as local governments have to kind of fill the void filled by the or made by the state of Texas, because you're right that we're not doing nearly enough to inspect pipelines, to and then certainly the policies to move us away from gas and reduce our dependence on gas. We're you know, moving in the opposite direction from the state of Texas, unfortunately.
Now, we talked about that, but also, not to change the subject, but what's going on? We had an EPA decision by the United States Supreme Court. How is that favorable to Houston?
Well, yeah, it was real bad news. You know, in West Virginia versus EPA, the Supreme Court ruled that the Environmental Protection Agency has fewer tools at its disposal to fight global warming pollution from power plants. And, you know, we know that power plants are the second largest source of global warming pollution, you know, coming from you know, for example, coal-fired power plants like the W.A. Parish plant just outside of Houston in Fort Bend County, which is the third largest global warming polluter in the state of Texas and in the top 10 nationally. Texas has, you know, more dirty coal-fired power plants, you know, in the top 10 than any other state in the nation. And so, you know, it's real bad news that the EPA won't be able to move forward on, you know, aggressively to reduce pollution.
Well, the governor was ecstatic about it. It's a benefit for the state.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a benefit for the big polluters, you know, the big coal companies and gas companies that don't want to have to reduce their pollution or move away, you know, from fossil fuels towards cleaner sources of energy. Definitely a win for them. They'll make a lot of money now thanks to this court decision. But it's terrible news for the people of Texas, you know, who are already suffering from some of the worst impacts of global warming, whether it's, you know, extreme droughts, wildfires, you know, smoggier days, extreme heat, and of course, and then hurricanes, you know, like Harvey and others. And, you know, those impacts are only going to get worse unless we cut emissions. That's why the court's decision was just so harmful, and is going to require us to, you know, identify new strategies moving forward to cut pollution.
Yeah, what can be some of those new strategies? Because, like I said, in Texas, it's so hard, especially with climate deniers, it's not a problem.
Well, there, the EPA still has some tools available in their tool belts, you know, including, reducing pollution from coal fired plants and other, using other policies. So there's the regional haze rule, for example, that's supposed to help improve air quality in national parks. The Parrish plants there near Houston is a major contributor to pollution at Big Bend National Park, for example. And so they can kind of force the plant to install pollution controls. So there's a variety of other EPA policies available. We also just need the local governments to do more. So Houston, for example, could create a bulk purchasing of renewable energy program. So kind of aggregating residential customers in Houston to purchase more wind and solar and help reduce our dependence on fossil fuels from the grid. So there's definitely, still things that we can do. It's going to be harder, but, we can't give up, of course.
We talked about this before, and we talked about power plants in Texas. It seems like regulation is still going by the wayside here. And now we had the Harris County DA file a lawsuit against Union Pacific. Talking about environmental, you always talk about environmental damage, especially in lower income neighborhoods, and trying to fight that is so hard to do.
Yeah, that's right. We know that pollution disproportionately impacts communities of color and low income communities, and often those lower income communities have the least means to fight new concrete batch plants coming in, for example, or to take on a big railroad company and polluted groundwater. I think that's kind of good news that the city is kind of under Mayor Turner is taking more and more action, and we're going to really need that, as well as just the advocacy from nonprofit groups, lawsuits, we still have some ways to fight back, but it's definitely a real challenge.
How can people find out more about your organization? We always try to promote Environment Texas.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, our website's environmenttexas.org. We're also available on social media, so you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. Certainly always looking for support from folks, so that people want to donate or volunteer. We're working to unite people around the state to work for a cleaner, greener future, and we need all the help we can get.
That was Luke Metzger with Environment Texas. You can again get in touch with them at environmenttexasalputtogether.org. You're listening to the People's News on Community Radio KPFT Houston. Most think that the original founders of this country were men, but long before, Native women ran the tribes that they were in. They also had abortions, but it was done naturally, as Harvey Wasserman explains.
Well, Margaret Sanger founded Planned Parenthood in the early 1900s because her mother kept having children and finally died in childbirth. And so Planned Parenthood was formed to allow women to have information about contraception, birth control, sex education. I mean, quite a number of the young people who get pregnant really have no idea what's going on. And it's an amazing situation where you have the right wing in this country claiming to be Christian, who don't want young women to have sex education and don't want young women to have the right to reproductive choice. And at the same time, don't want to, allow them to have their own control over their own bodies. It's truly astounding, a complete contradiction. The organization in American history that has actually avoided or prevented the most abortions by far is Planned Parenthood, because they distribute, contraception, and they do sex education, and they take care of women's health. If you really want to stop or lower the number of abortions in America, we should be supporting Planned Parenthood.
But it's the opposite of that now. It's more of an attack. It's always been an attack on Planned Parenthood for a number of years. People like to say that that, you know, you want to stop abortion, but they, in Texas, they took sex ed out of most schools.
And yeah. It's really ridiculous. And, you know, in the broader picture, it's men wanting to control women. I mean, you know, the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe v. Wade means that the next woman that Donald Trump rapes is going to have his kid. That's what really it boils down to. And it's an outrage. And, you know, one thing we have to remember is that the indigenous societies in North America, which are here 20,000 years or more, in those societies, women had control over their own bodies. An indigenous woman could always stop a pregnancy with herbal means. They knew exactly how to do it. It was not a big deal. And in any of the indigenous tribes of North America, if a man stepped forward and told a woman that she could not control her own body and that she had to have his child, he would have been laughed out of the tribe. I mean, that's not been the case in America. Women ran the tribes in North America. They were matriarchies, and certainly women had control not only over their own bodies, but over the household, over the gardens, and the political realities of the government. So this is a complete aberration. You know, these justices, I won't call them justices, they're interlopers on the court, are saying there needs to be historical precedent to uphold the rights of an abortion. Well, the historical precedent is 20,000 years old. It's only in the last less than 200 years that men have been using the legal system to impose the denial of a woman's right to choose.
I didn't know this about the Aboriginal population in North America, Aboriginal women having that much power, because it's never in the history books it's never talked about.
No, the indigenous themselves are never talked about. All you hear from some of the textbooks is that there were people here, and they were wiped out, and that made the way for progress. The fact of the matter is, when white people came here, when the Europeans came here, they found extremely advanced, civilized societies. The most important in terms of the formation of the United States of America was the Iroquois Confederacy, also known as the Haudenosaunee Confederacy in upstate, what's now upstate New York, from Albany to Buffalo. And you had five tribes who were in a confederation. They had a Bill of Rights. They had a Congress. They had a real democracy. And they were run by women. Women ran the houses. They raised the families. They ran the gardens. And I saw a great documentary once. An Iroquois woman was asked why it was that if the women ran the tribes, the men were the chiefs. And she said, well, it gives them something to do, and it makes them feel important. So, you know, but also, now this is not always the case in Central and South America, but in North America, virtually all the tribes were run by the women. And they certainly had control over their own bodies. It was never an issue. If a woman got pregnant and wanted to end her pregnancy, that was her choice. The men probably never even heard about it. The women knew what herbs to use, and they did it. And it was never raised. So the historical precedent in what's now the United States of America for the right to a woman's right to choose dates back 20,000 years, and it's only been challenged in the last 200 or less.
What about European women when they came here to America? What was the difference? Were they mostly obedient?
Well, this is in my People's Spiral of U.S. History. It's my new book. People can write me about it, solartopia@gmail.com, solartopia@gmail.com. It's the People's Spiral of U.S. History. And women in the Western cult, in the European society, were subservient. I mean, a lot of people refer to Athens in Greece as the first great democracy, but women had no rights to the power in the government in Athens. Athens also had slaves. In Rome, actually, women were a little more powerful, but still, these European societies were totally male dominated, and the concept of freedom and of a meaningful democracy really came from the Iroquois Confederacy and the other tribes of North America. These were alien concepts to the Europeans that came here. Now, lucky for us, there were a few of the white guys in early America, most importantly, Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Paine, who liked democracy and who liked what the indigenous stood for. And they had a huge impact, especially Franklin had a huge impact on writing the Constitution. Any democratic features that are in the Constitution of the United States pretty much derived from what the whites, especially Franklin, learned from the Iroquois Confederacy and other Native tribes.
How did we get to where we are now, though? I mean, because it took years for women to get the right to vote. It also took, you know, when that was the first generation. I would think that was the first generation of women activism. And then we had the second and third wave, like in the 70s, where has the women's movement gone? Because now you have women that are supportive of, you know, ending abortion, et cetera.
Well, the women's movement is as powerful as ever, if not more so. But the you know, this Puritan counterattack, you know, the Empire Strikes Back, is rooted in the undemocratic features of the Constitution of the United States, which was written in secret by 55 rich white men. There were no people of color, unless you, you know, there's some question about Alexander Hamilton. There were no farmers. There were no, you know, craftspeople. It was all guys.
Harvey's new book is The People's Spiral of U.S. History. You're listening to The People's News on Community Radio KPFT, Houston. The Supreme Court's abortion ruling sets up a Texas-wide ban and criminalization of women who seek abortions. We hear more from Roz Brown and the Texas News Service.
The ruling on abortion by the U.S. Supreme Court has returned the issue to the states, fulfilling long-held goals of Republican lawmakers in Texas to ban and criminalize abortion. With the 49-year-old case overturned, a trigger law takes effect next month, banning abortions from the moment of fertilization. There is no exception for rape or incest. Texas lawmakers were ahead of the high court, passing legislation last fall to prohibit abortion after 6 weeks. Amy Aaron Beatty with the Texas abortion rights group Avow expects half the states to follow Texas's lead.
We've been ringing the alarm that what is happening in Texas doesn't stay in Texas, and that the public health crisis Texans have been facing for nearly 10 months will be the reality in half the country. Our opponents are not going to stop until abortion is completely inaccessible in this country.
In his concurring opinion with the 6-3 vote, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas said high court rulings that established a right to contraception, as well as gay rights, should also be reconsidered. Following the ruling, Texas GOP Governor Greg Abbott said abolishing Roe v. Wade, quote, reinstated the right of states to protect innocent unborn children. New Mexico is now the closest state for many Texans seeking an abortion. But getting there may not be possible for low-income people who don't have the time, money, or child care to travel out of state. Progress Now Advocacy Director Diana Gomez says education is the next step.
There are a lot of folks who don't know about the existence of abortion funds, of infrastructures that are already in place to help people get abortions. And so we want to let people know about clinics in surrounding states.
In addition to Texas, 25 other states are expected to make abortion illegal, affecting the lives of 36 million people. University of Texas Associate Professor Carrie White says entire regions of the country may soon be in the business of extreme criminalization.
In a state like Texas, it's also going to criminalize a whole range of behaviors and practices for people who are trying to help someone get an abortion.
Prior to the court's ruling, a poll by Reuters showed about 71% of Americans, including majorities of Democrats and Republicans, believe pregnancy termination should be a patient-doctor decision. For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to The People's News on Community Radio KPFT, Houston. KPFT is having a town hall meeting tomorrow, Saturday, July 9th, from noon until 3 p.m. It's at the McGowan Stella Link Library, which is on 7405 Stella Link. And I'm asking you, kind of begging you really, if you're a fan of the People's News, local news programming, and all of the news that we show on KPFT, it's crucial that you show up tomorrow afternoon and express your opinion about that. So what's happening with the station? Well, we've had a general manager who just recently left, and we have an interim general manager who also is a host of one of the shows on KPFT featuring music from the Grateful Dead. He has expressed an interest in moving KPFT 90.1 FM from the place where it is now, where we've worked over 75 years to get to move it to a music-only station. The thing that makes me concerned about that is that's the way that a lot of radio stations went across the country over the last 10, 20 years, where stations were consolidated, then eventually put onto a satellite platform, and then now finally Pandora. If you really want to listen to the Grateful Dead, all you have to do is you download a free app, put in Grateful Dead Radio on Pandora, and you can listen to that all day long with a minimal amount of commercials. You really don't need to have a terrestrial radio station for that. What you need a terrestrial radio station for is to hear the things you can't hear on globalized, nationalized broadcast on streaming channels. And those are local news, the weather, national news, headlines, and discussion that you can't hear anywhere else. That's really the niche that KPFT and the People's News has carved out over the last 5 years. So please come out tomorrow and express your opinion and help us keep local news and local information on the air, the stuff that you need to know. Once again, KPFT's town hall meeting will be tomorrow, Saturday, July 9th, from noon until 3 in the afternoon, and it will be at the McGowan Stella Link Library on 7405 Stella Link. Please be there. I will be glad to greet you, to shake your hand, and thank you for all your support of the People's News over the last 5 years and what we've done. We really do appreciate that. So, once again, KPFT is having a town hall meeting tomorrow, Saturday, July 9th, from noon till 3 in the afternoon, and it is at the McGowan Stella Link Library, 7405 Stella Link, and I hope to see you there. Hi, this is Steve Gallington of the People's News here on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. But what is the People's News? Just as KPFT is commercial-free, people-powered radio, the People's News is people-powered news. We are not owned by corporations nor dependent on business for funding. We are free to report the unvarnished and unspun truth, and we have time and focus to drill into stories that impact you the most. If there is something going on in your neighborhood that the world needs to know about, bring it to us. We accept fully produced audio, written material, guest interview topics, or even ideas for stories. Call me at 832-754-4128 or email us at richrad9@gmail.com. That's richrad9, all put together, at gmail.com. And let's get started. The People's News airs every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. on our HD2 channel and every Friday evening at 8 p.m. on KPFT's HD1 channel, also known as FM.
Hi, this is Mike Honig.
And Andrew Ferguson.
Hosts of Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig, a political talk show on KPFT HD2.
We discuss news and opinions that might be under your radar.
From around Houston, the state,
the nation, and the world.
Plus unique analysis that only a liberal and a socialist can provide.
But our biases don't blind us to facts.
We're not here to be left wing or right wing.
We're Think Wing. Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig. Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on 90.1 HD2 and KPFT.org.
KPFT, Houston's community station.
Make the connection between your favorite programs on KPFT and your power to keep them on the air. As a nonprofit organization, we don't rely on corporate sponsorship or government funding. We count on listeners like you for donations, programming, and much of our staffing. That's how KPFT and Pacifica Radio work. Without listener support, 90.1 would be radio silence. Your contribution keeps the lights on, powers our transmitters, and covers our bandwidth. Becoming a member is quick, easy, tax-deductible, and secure. Just call or text GIVE to 713-526-5738 or go online to kpft.org. Become a member today and join the special group of heroes who keep KPFT on the air and free for everyone. You have the power. Connect to 526-5738 or go to kpft.org today.
Hi, thanks for listening to KPFT. KPFT has always provided us with music and public affairs we don't hear anywhere else. It's not mainstream, and that's how we like it. Please support community radio and join KPFT. Call 713-526-5738 now and pledge your support. My name is Jane, and I'm a